I live on a remote, quiet street in a relatively small town. For the sake of my safety and privacy, I will not disclose the town, as I still live there to this day. It was the last day of school before Christmas break, and like any other ninth grader, I was excited to be home and play the new Call of Duty that was coming out that year. A little background here: since I was in the sixth grade, I always walked home. Today was no different. I left school around 2:37 p.m., but this time I had to take a different route home, as my street had construction. I remember the shortcut from when I was a little kid that I used to take to school when my road or usual route was blocked or closed due to some reason. I started making my way down the side road, as I did years before, when I noticed a black Ford following me awful close, but doing the speed limit probably to avoid suspicion. I took a few turns to see if this vehicle was following me, and sure enough it was. I eventually made it home, and when I did, I told my parents, who then passed it off as being over paranoid, and that was that. Fast forward a few days, and it was Christmas Eve. No sign of that car, and no further incidents, until 11 p.m. rolled around, and we were settling in for bed. I remember doing my routine when my dog started barking. I yelled and said, "Shut up." I eventually got up and let them out. I want to say 8 minutes passed when I was startled out of bed, a man screaming in pain outside my window. I looked up to see my dad with a shotgun running outside to the dogs. I rushed out of my bed to the window, and just as I got there, I heard my dad yelling at this guy, and then he shot the back of the guy's black Ford speeding down our road. A police report has been filed, and it's been 4 years since the incident, and I'm now finishing school and looking at colleges. The police never found him, and I still sleep with my dogs by my bed, so the man who tried to ruin my Christmas doesn't come back.
Christmas Eve with my 6-year-old son was one of the most memorable nights of my entire life. Sure, we'd had a bunch of Christmases before that, but being a 6-year-old marked the first time that he really started to understand the whole Santa thing. He became completely fascinated with the idea that this fat dude could just, like, shapeshift down the chimney, not to mention how he could visit every single child on the planet over the course of one night. He started begging me and his mom to take him to Santa's grotto, so he could meet the man himself. And when it came to leaving out cookies and milk, he insisted on leaving out an entire package of Pepperidge Farm, believing the more cookies we gave Santa, the better his presents would be. It was absolutely adorable, and it totally rekindled any of the festive spirit me and his mom had lost over the years. So, on Christmas Eve, we leave out the whole bag of cookies, top up Santa's glass of milk, and then I take him upstairs to bed. He's way excited about the possibility of Santa arriving, which poses something of a problem for me and his mom. If he was still awake when we started putting presents under the tree, he might come downstairs, see us eating the cookies and arranging all the boxes, then his festive fantasy would be totally ruined in my mind. We agreed that was totally unacceptable, so we waited until like 1 a.m. when he was completely out for the count, before we dressed the scene like Santa had visited, even including a little note thanking our son for all the cookies, saying he was the most generous little boy he'd ever had the pleasure of delivering to. We were so stoked to see his reaction in the morning, so much so that even we had trouble sleeping that night. But just like our son, the adrenaline subsided eventually and we both drifted off to sleep. The next thing I remember, my son is standing by my bed, shaking me awake and whispering, "Dad, wake up, wake up." I can see the little glow in the dark hands of the clock on my bedside table, and they're telling me it's just before 5 a.m. So as much as it was obscenely early in my mind, I knew I had to get up if I wanted to see his face when he opened his presents. All this is going through my head, and I'm just about getting ready to slip out from under the warmth of the covers when my son says, "Dad, Dad, Santa's downstairs." My first move is to look over to my wife's side of the bed, but instead of being downstairs like I thought she might be, she's lying there asleep next to me. I'm instantly struck by this uh-oh moment, thinking that if my son had just heard someone downstairs, like actually heard someone, it obviously sure wasn't Santa Claus. I remember telling my son to wait where he was as I crept towards the doorway listening out for any sounds coming from downstairs. Believe it or not, it wasn't just his imagination. He was right. I could hear someone downstairs. By this time, his mom had woken up and she's asking what time it is. But all it took was one look from me as I reached for the little lockbox I kept my gun in, and she just knew something was wrong. She was just amazing about the whole thing too. Just totally affirmed why I wanted to have children with her in the first place. She just started, "Come to mama, come get a Christmas cuddle." And all this other stuff just completely distracting our son, despite him insisting he wanted to go meet Santa. I closed the door behind me, crept towards the staircase, then felt my heart pounding as I started to descend. As soon as I saw the two people crouched down by our tree, I raised my pistol and just growled, "Get out of my house." As soon as they heard me, they just bolted back out to the window they'd pried open to get the presents under our tree. I thank God they didn't put up any resistance, that they didn't even say anything before they just jumped out the window. I know of many other confrontations like that where the homeowner came out way worse, and I thank God every single day that I didn't end up as one of them. To me and my partner, it was nothing short of a miracle that the only casualty of that morning was our son's hurt feelings. He was furious that I hadn't let him meet Santa Claus, and no matter how much we tried to explain that Santa was busy and that he couldn't stop to talk, our son cried and cried, all up until we showed him the special note that Santa wrote for him. And that really did the trick, especially once I improvised the idea that Santa had written the note because he was so grateful, even though he was super busy. Now, me and my partner are still wondering how we're going to tell him about that once he's older. We know it'll be something we'll be able to smile about. I mean, no one got hurt, thank God, and I know it'll be funny to see his reaction to the truth, but in that moment, it was just about one of the most terrifying occurrences of my entire life.
This took place in 2014 when I was 15 years old, and it's probably the most terrifying thing that I've ever encountered. Let me explain. My family and I live in Atlanta, and we'd occasionally drive up north to visit our extended family in upstate Virginia. It is a very long and boring trip there, but it was worth it as we had only gone to see them once a year and we would be staying for a few nights. This year, they had invited us to stay for Christmas as we had never celebrated it with them before and figured it would be a nice stay. To cut to the chase, we get there around dinner time on Christmas Eve and everyone was just about done setting the table for us to eat. After we all ate, my uncle proposed to us kids that we go play manhunt out in the backwoods as long as it wasn't snowing too hard. For those of you who don't know what manhunt is, it's basically like hide and seek flashlight tag. Everybody is divided into two teams. One team is the hunters, while the other team were the runners, and whoever the last person standing was got a small prize. Each of us were equipped with a flashlight while my uncle kept a close eye on us. In this case, I was on the runner's team, and my uncle had given my team a good minute to pick a hiding spot. I chose to hide behind an old barrel that was thrown into the woods years ago. Even though it was a little ways into the woods, it was still a great hiding spot. Eventually, my uncle had blown the whistle announcing that the opposing team was coming to find us. I ever so quickly ducked behind this large barrel about a good 25 feet away from the house. After about 5 minutes of hiding, I then began to see that the other team kept on getting closer and closer to my hiding spot, which meant that I had to move quick. I quietly walked into the woods where I was sure they couldn't see me, when I saw the dim glow of an orangish light about 20 or so feet into the woods. At first, I thought that it could have been one of the hunters, but this light wasn't as bright as a normal flashlight, and the other team wasn't in the direction of this light. Being the curious kid I was, I started making my way over to it, wondering as to what it could be. My initial thought was that it was a lantern of some type, but I didn't understand as to why there would be a lantern this far out into the woods. Once I got about 10 feet away from it, right then and there, it randomly shut off, allowing me to see nothing but darkness and the light snowfall. I then thought to myself that maybe I didn't need to see what that light was. Suddenly, I begin to hear heavy footsteps in the snow approach me fast from behind. With it being dark outside and still snowing, I couldn't see anyone, so I assumed it was one of the hunters. I ran as fast as I could, a bit more closer to the house where I saw everyone crowded around, including my teammates. I had asked them what was wrong, and all I remember was my dad and uncle telling me to go back inside. When we did, my mom came to tell me and my cousins that there had been a police officer that came up to the door and informed them about a few locals who reported a serial rapist in the area. My blood ran cold as she told us this, and I immediately explained what had happened to me in the woods. Needless to say, we called the police back and they have a team out searching in the backwoods. However, they never did end up finding whoever chased me in those woods, and we never found out what that light was. I haven't been back up there since, and neither have my parents, and we don't plan on ever going back up there anytime soon.
This story takes place on one of the best nights for kids around America, but one of the worst nights for me. It was Christmas Eve of 2019. For a little backstory, 3 or 4 months before this event took place, I broke up with my girlfriend. The event that caused me to break up with her was she stole over $900 from me. I caught her and all she said was, before she left, this isn't over. Fast forward 3 months to Christmas Eve. Since we live in Texas and have a house in the hills, every year on Christmas, my family usually goes there to celebrate Christmas. However, this year, I couldn't make it because I had to work. This year, I was 17 years old and just got a job by a local supermarket and had to work all Christmas Day. I had no problem being home alone. On Christmas Eve night, it was getting late, probably 11 o'clock or so. I decided to take a shower and go to bed as I needed to get up early for the next day. As I started to shower, I heard a strange noise coming from the garage, sort of like a metallic banging or something dropping. I thought it was some form of a heater because I put the water as hot as I could. I took my shower. When I finished my shower, I went to go to bed, and as I did, I heard the noise again. Although this time, it was on the other side of the yard. I was confused because I didn't think there was anything over there. I went to go look outside the window and see. I looked out and didn't see anything but my backyard, completely empty. I completely disregarded it because my backyard is pretty flat and empty, and it has nowhere for someone to hide. Now it's hard to explain, but my window is fairly large, and it has a blind spot to the left where there's a corner where someone could easily hide, but I was tired and didn't think about it. As I walked off, I heard a bang, but this time it was on my window of my house. And as I looked out the window, I saw the figure of a person dressed in all black standing at my window. It made me jump, however, I wasn't too scared as I am fairly a large dude and a high school football player. This all changed when he reached for his pocket for what I assumed was a gun. I ran away from the window toward my parents' room to go retrieve my dad's shotgun. I knew he kept it in the safe and had the safe key under his pillow. As I was running to retrieve this, I dialed 911. As soon as the dispatcher answered, I heard the horrific sound of the glass shattering. I made it to my parents' room, and I shut the door quietly. I whispered into the phone what was happening to the dispatcher. She said to stay on the line as the county sheriff was en route, but it would take about 5 minutes or so. I told her I was going to retrieve the shotgun. She said that's not a bad idea, but only use it if I had to, with caution. I quickly realized my dad took the gun with him because they were going to the gun range. I informed the dispatcher that the gun was gone. She said to make sure to stay on the line. For a moment, everything was silent, and I thought that it may have been a burglar, and they got spooked when they realized someone was home. My heart sank into my chest when I heard not one, but two sets of boots walking up the stairs. I heard a heavy metal pole scraping the floor. I locked and barricaded the door to my parents' room, then I almost passed out when I heard one of them talk. Not in any voice, but my ex-girlfriend's voice. She said, "Merry Christmas, Tommy," and I heard a male voice mockingly say, "We know you're in there," and he knocked on the door of my parents' room. I almost screamed and got underneath the bed. My ex then said, "Don't worry if you can't open the door, we'll open it for you." I heard the pole hit the door and the lock falling out of the door to the floor. I had to put my hand over my mouth to keep from being too loud. All of a sudden, I heard police sirens and my ex muttering, "Oh shit." They ran down the stairs to run out the front door when the officer said, "Freeze." I heard a bunch of yelling and then an officer came in and said, "If you're in there, make yourself known." I called out to him saying I was Tommy and I called 911. He told me to come out slowly with my hands visible. As I left my parents' room, I saw the two being escorted out in handcuffs. The rest of my night consisted of paperwork and me talking to my parents who were making a 3-hour drive to come home. This incident was very disturbing to me, and I'm grateful that I reacted the way that I did. Had I not, I might be dead right now.
When I was 7 years old, my parents offered me a very unusual Christmas present. We were moving into a new house across the country, right around the holidays, and I remember my parents sitting me down and basically asking, "If you could choose any other name in the world to call yourself, what would it be?" I thought about it for a second, then decided that the coolest first name I'd ever heard was Dexter. No, not because of the fictional serial killer, more because of the old Cartoon Network show called Dexter's Lab, which centered around the coolest kid scientist in the history of TV. Mom and Dad asked me to really think about it, because I was going to have to use my new name forever and ever. But my heart was set on Dexter's, so that was that. From then on, my parents referred to me only as Dexter, and not by my old name, which was Anthony. It made for an easy transition, and since we were in a new place, people didn't know us by anything else, and it just so happened that our family had a second name too. That would have all been much harder back in Providence, but I was still kind of curious as to why we'd move and changed our names. "It's like a Christmas present to ourselves," my mom said. "New beginnings can be a gift." And I suppose she was right. I was much happier in our new home, and soon the weirdest Christmas ever was just a speck in the rearview mirror, so to speak. It all started in such a weird way, too. Something I didn't understand at all until many years later. I remember getting off the school bus and walking the short distance back to my house when, all of a sudden, I heard a voice calling out to me from a parked car. They were like,
"Hey, hey kid, you're Tommy's kid, right?"
I just nodded. My dad had a lot of friends who all drove fancy cars, so I figured this was another one of his buddies.
"What, you don't recognize me now?"
the guy asked me.
"It's me, your Uncle Johnny. I was at your communion."
I just stared at him nervously, wanting to get inside to get warm, but knowing it would be rude to just walk away.
Okay, you're still young, but look, I need you to do me a little favor,"
the guy continued.
"I got a Christmas present for your pops here. Make sure he gets it."
The guy then produced what looked like a shoebox. Pretty expensive looking thing too. I remember wanting to open it to see what was inside, but the guy was quick to cut me off, telling me not to look inside, that it was a surprise for my father.
"You don't want to ruin the surprise, do you?"
the guy asked, and I responded by shaking my head.
"There's a good kid. Now run along and make sure you give it to your father. And remember, no peeking, okay?"
I was considerably less nervous by that point. I mean, if he had a present for my dad, he had to be a good guy. So I just did as I was told. Took the box into the house, then waited for my dad to get home from work. When he arrived home, I rushed to give him the shoebox. I remember it feeling like it was sort of a gift from me, too. Like if I was delivering it, I was sharing in some of that joy. But when I walked up to him and offered him the box, saying it was from Uncle Johnny, he just said, "Who?" I repeated that it was from an Uncle Johnny, and Dad still had that puzzled look on his face as he took the box from me, took off the lid, and rustled around the papers inside to see what it contained. Then suddenly, he froze, and I remember watching the color drain from his face like it was yesterday. He slammed the lid back on the box, and when I asked what was in there, Dad just told me to go up to my room. Then as I was walking up the stairs, he started calling out for my mom. And that's how this weird Christmas started. The next morning, Mom and Dad were piling suitcases into our car while telling me and my sister that we were going to spend the holidays in the countryside because the snow would be better. The next thing I know, we're in a cabin in the middle of nowhere, and I'm getting the very unusual Christmas present of getting to pick a new name. The thing is, at that age, it all just seemed totally normal. Or rather, I know something was happening, I just thought it was something that every family did. After a while, we moved into this new house in another state, and this meant that for the longest time, I thought Colorado and Rhode Island were like right next door to each other. It didn't even occur to me that we'd move far away from home because I couldn't think of a reason why we'd move so far. I remember asking my parents if we're going to change our names the next Christmas, and they told me no, because it'd be hard for all the people in our new town to learn new names, so we'd just be keeping the ones we had. I know it seems crazy, but being so young, I just kind of forgot about the whole thing after a while. Again, I thought it was something every family did at some point, just move towns and pick new names. I thought it was part of the process or something. It didn't make a difference with our parents. Me and my sister just called them the same thing we did before the move, Mom and Dad. I had a little trouble getting the hang of my sister's new name, but, and I know this is becoming a running theme here, but kids can get used to anything pretty quickly. Then, that was that. For like 11 years, my parents basically covered up what happened to the point where I didn't suspect a thing. I think maybe my sister did, but I definitely didn't. She ended up getting the talk before she moved away to college, and then she was part of this conspiracy too, in cahoots with our parents to keep me in the dark for another 3 years. And then, right when I was picking colleges come SAT time, they sat me down for the talk too. Some of you might have guessed what the talk consisted of by now, and no, it wasn't the birds and bees talk, if that's what you're thinking. The talk was basically my parents explaining to me that the reason we'd moved out to Colorado all those years ago was because my dad was in the witness protection program. He'd never actually been in the mafia himself, he was just an associate, but things went wrong for him in a big, bad way, and he was dealing with guys who didn't just cut off business ties, they cut off heads and hands so the cops can't identify you, at least not right away. But anyway, according to them, the mob guys he was working with had two problems. Firstly, they were convinced someone in their organization was a police informant. And secondly, they had no idea who that person might be. So, in order to flush out the informant, they basically set out a bunch of packages to each of them, all containing something that might scare them into making a move. Apparently, my dad wasn't the informant, but he also had no idea that this was part of a larger scheme to flush the mole out. He thought it was a straight-up accusation and decided to get us out of Providence before any punishments could be meted out. So, ironically, the mafia had turned a solid earner into an FBI informant, all by just accusing the wrong person. Now, I don't know if that's 100% true or not. When your parents lie to you for almost your entire life, you wouldn't put another couple past them, but it's the version I chose to believe. But what I know for certain is what was in that shoebox I gave to my dad. It was a rat, and someone had hammered a nail through its mouth.
A
I've worked as a mall Santa for the past few Christmases now. I'm only 33, but thanks to my complete lack of exercise routine, I definitely have the figure for it. And once I have the beard and the wig and hat combo going, there's basically no telling the difference between me and a 60-year-old dude. Mall Santa work can be tough for a few different reasons. Number one, the hours are really long and the pay can be really terrible depending on which mall you manage to get employed by. Number two, the kids can be little monsters, and their parents can be just as terrible on occasion too. But the reason I'm actually considering skipping the entire thing this year and having something of a budget Christmas is that you get some seriously disturbing things happening from time to time. I mean, the kind of things that keep you up at night, even after a long, exhausting shift. However, the worst thing that's ever happened to me as a mall Santa was actually nothing to do with kids, parents, or terrible pay and hours, and I'm sure you'll see why after I tell the story. So every year, usually when the malls are quietest during weekday mornings, we get specially organized visits from special needs kids or adults with learning disabilities who are bussed in from the surrounding areas. Pretty much every other mall Santa I've spoken to about this agrees that it can be one of the most rewarding parts of the job, and that the adults with learning difficulties are often even more excited about the prospect of meeting Santa than some of the kids are. Literally, the only downside is that some of them are so heavy that my thighs hurt after having like 50 in a row sit on my lap, but other than that, it's honestly one of the best parts of the job. Last year, I'm in the middle of one of the special sessions when I get this girl coming up and sitting on my lap. I say girl, but she was legitimately a grown woman, looking like she was in her mid-30s or something, but she had the mental age of about 9 or 10, all smiles and giggles, way shy about meeting Santa again. It was cute as all get out, but the interaction was not so cute, and turned that way pretty fast. So like I said, she's all giggles and smiles as she comes up to sit on my lap, and I give her the usual spiel, asking her name, how old she is, if she's excited for Christmas and all that stuff. Then, when it comes to asking her what she wants me to bring her on Christmas Eve, she starts thinking about it, smiling at first before she suddenly gets super serious with a touch of sadness. I'm asking her if she's okay, what the problem is, and she's like shaking her head, acting like she doesn't want to tell me anything. I take the time in explaining that no matter what she asks for, I'll try my very, very best to bring it to her, no matter how big or small it is, that Santa always tries his best to bring good little girls and boys what they ask for on Christmas. She takes a moment, then the exchange goes a little something like this. You mean it, Santa? You can get me anything I want for Christmas?
Anything. Anything you want. Just tell me and I'll do my best.
Okay, well. And at this point she lowers her voice to a whisper and leans into my ear. I want my boyfriend to stop hitting me. Can you make that happen? I was sort of dumbstruck for a second. Like all of the things I thought she was going to ask, that would most definitely not have topped the list. I remember just nodding at first, trying to find the words, and being like,
I'll make that happen for you, sure, no problem.
She was so happy to hear that I'd fix it for her, and gave me the biggest hug I think I'd ever received while working as a mall Santa. I had to put on a huge smile, and of all the times I've had to fake being jolly and merry, that time with her was the hardest. But I just felt numb, like completely broken by what I'd heard, and I just tried my best to get through the rest of the session without bursting into tears. I remember all these thoughts rushing through my head, terrifying ideas of institutional abuse. She said boyfriend, and that made it extra creepy. Like, sure, it could have been just another guy in her care group or something, another adult with learning difficulties who she'd hooked up with somehow, but there was nothing to say that it wasn't a member of her care team that was, like, abusing her. In a completely different sense, too. Not just physically, but, well, you catch my drift. So when the session was over, I approached the member of the care team that had organized the trip and had accompanied them to the mall. I didn't let anything slip. I just told them how great I thought the session had gone and
asked a few details about the group that had organized them. As it turned out, they were all from the same care home type thing, so I made a note of the name of the place as well as the name of the girl that was apparently being abused. That night, I couldn't sleep. I just kept picturing some evil monster abusing that poor girl, taking advantage of their position to put some poor special needs woman through torture, then telling her that she'd be killed if she ever breathed a word of it to anyone. And here's where stuff starts getting even more intense. Now, I could have just called 911 with the info I had at hand, registered a general complaint, and then heard nothing back about it. But a buddy of mine had a cousin with the local police department, and not just some gumshoe beat cop either. They were a detective. It took some convincing, but I convinced my buddy to pass along their cell phone numbers so I could get in touch with the dude personally. It took a little while, but I managed to get through to the guy. He sounded pretty skeptical at first and seemed kind of irritated that his cousin had even given me his number, but once I explained what the issue was, his tone changed completely. Now, I didn't find this out until way later from my friend that his cousin had a special needs daughter who was probably going to have to either live with them for the rest of their life or was going to head into a group home at some point so she could have some measure of independence. So when I explained the situation with the special needs girl I met as a mall Santa, it obviously hit the guy right in the feels as the topic was so close to home. The detective tells me that he'll look into it, thanks me for letting him know. I get him to promise to tell me if anything comes of it, and he says yes, and we hang up. And that was the last I heard of it for like a month. Then after maybe 5 or 6 weeks, I'd almost forgotten about the whole thing. Christmas was over, the mall Santa job was way behind me, and I was back to working my regular hours as a self-employed mechanic. Then I get a call from a number that seems vaguely familiar, although I wasn't quite sure why. Turns out it was my buddy's detective cousin, who reminded me of the tip that I'd given him about the care company. Of course I remembered, but by that time I really didn't think anything would come of it, but oh how wrong I was. The detective thanks me for the information, and although he told me he couldn't say too much, he told me to keep an eye out on local media outlets. The next thing I know, it's all over the local papers that there's been a misconduct scandal involving a local care company. I picked up a copy and read the story, only to find out that it's the very same one I had reported. The long and short of it is that the cops had uncovered endemic levels of abuse in the company, stuff that varied from financial discrepancies to straight-up physical abuse, and sickeningly enough, there was even cases of care workers taking advantage of mentally disabled females in ways that were seriously inappropriate. There were numerous arrests, with some of the sleazier and violent criminals looking like they were going to get years in prison for how long they so cruelly taken advantage of some of the most vulnerable people in society. It made me sick to my stomach to read about how some people could bring themselves to do something like that. But it was stopped, and I felt incredible that I'd actually managed to be a part of the chain of events that brought the whole thing crashing down. I just hoped that that poor girl, who was obviously pretty traumatized by what was happening to her, and just not being able to understand why it was happening either, found some measure of peace after it. And in a way, Santa did kind of bring her exactly what she wanted, even if it wasn't on Christmas Day, and that, ladies and gentlemen, is a thought that never fails to make me tear up.